20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Happy Friday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL and the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews. Also, just hit that subscribe button. It's super, super simple. Helps us a ton. But more than anything, always, always, always appreciate you guys being here today. Just for a beautiful Friday, what more could you possibly want? We're going to be going over the reasons to be most pessimistic about the Green Bay Packers on Friday, March 20th. Now, I have good news for you. In case you missed yesterday's episode, yesterday we did the opposite. We went over the reasons to be most optimistic about your Green Bay Packers right now. And if you get through today's episode and you're feeling a little bit down, you can always go back and rewatch that one and get that optimism flowing again. As I talked about yesterday we took the optimism and we took the volume and we turned it all the way up as far as we could. And we're going to be doing the same with pessimism today. We're going to be looking at all the negative aspects of why Green Bay has maybe not done enough to be that championship contender that we all want them to be. So let's turn that pessimism meter up. Let's be super negative for a day. And let's go over why your Green Bay Packers failed to become the Super Bowl contenders that we want them so desperately to be. We're going to start where we started yesterday, but this time it's not in such a positive vein. We're going to talk about the return of Matt LaFleur. Let me just say this. We have not, over the last few years, seen a consistent line of improvement. And I do understand that improvement is not always linear. It doesn't always go up the way that you would hope it would. Sometimes it's a step back, and then two steps forward, and then a step back, and then a step forward, and then three steps back, and then two steps. It can go back and forth a little bit. But over the course of time, there needs to be some consistent signs of improvement. And really since 2023, in a somewhat magical run at the end of the year, where you get that win against Dallas, a huge win against Dallas, and then look like you're going to beat the 49ers, ever since really the end of that 49ers game, feels like the magic escaped a little bit. And the next year you beat up on bad teams, but you couldn't beat the good teams. And then last year you had ups and downs. You had struggles against bad teams. You struggled again against good teams and you lost five games in a row to end the season. Obviously injuries played a huge part in that, but it's tough to pinpoint the specific areas of growth consistently as a team. And that falls on the head coach. There needs to be consistent growth and opportunities for improvement. I think the opportunities existed. I just don't think we saw the true results of that, at least not in a consistently positive enough way. Myself and Mike Wall have talked about, especially Mike at times, and again, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but we've talked about a lot the attention to detail that has been lacking for this team at times. I know Dusty Evely's talked about players not running the right routes at the right depth and cutting it off at the right point, running the plays the way that they're supposed to be executed. We've seen a lot of issues with the offensive line. There have been a lot of attention to detail errors. That, more often than not, comes down to coaching. We have not seen the fundamentals for this team, especially in the trenches, continue to improve. In fact, you can make an argument that they've actually regressed in a major way in 2025. Young players like Devontae Wyatt and LVN and Jordan Morgan and Anthony Belton, amongst others, especially in the trenches, have not taken those steps that we so desperately wanted them to take. We've not seen the overall growth as a team. And while the scheming by Matt LaFleur is usually good, and the game plans by Matt LaFleur are usually good, it's tough to see how this team is consistently getting better with the actual play on the field. And again, that attention to detail and that growth mentality that you need when a team has been the youngest team in the league for 2-3 consistent years in a row, that's your number one goal. It shouldn't have been in 23 or 24 to be like, hey, we need to be great right now. It should have been, hey, how can we be as good as we can possibly be to get these players as good as they can possibly be in 25, 26, 27 when they're going to be hitting their prime? And it's not to say that you can't win along the way, but it should have been a growth mindset, and I do not think we have seen that. So while I like the offensive game planning, I like the mentality, I like how they go about getting prepared for games, we just haven't seen this team really grow up the way that we wanted to over the course of the last few seasons. I'll add on top of that, the pairing of Brian Gutekunst and Matt LaFleur seems still a little bit oddfellow to me. And while Goody has changed his philosophy, or maybe just has had the opportunity I'm going to take that back. I don't think he's changed his philosophy, because when he came in, he immediately, you know, signed Jimmy Graham and Muhammad Wilkerson, brought Tremont Williams back. And then the next offseason, when he had legitimate money, went out and got Za'Darius Smith, Preston Smith, Adrian Amos, Billy Turner. And every single time since, when he's had legitimate money to spend, he's gone out and spent it. He's traded 2 first-round picks for Micah Parsons. So I don't actually think it's a change in mentality, but this is still, at its core, a more draft and develop team. And I think that Matt LaFleur is more a scheme and gameplay coach. And I think if you're going to have a draft and develop core of a philosophy with Brian Gutekunst, the general manager, you probably should have a coach whose number one trait is player development. And I don't think you have that. I think you have, and if you're going to have a coach whose primary function is game planning and scheming, then you want a GM who gets established players, not guys that take 3-4 years to develop and that need that mentorship and coaching and, you know, that atmosphere where they can have the leeway to get better and grow. That's not the atmosphere that Matt LaFleur is consistently putting on them. And so I think there is a little bit of a mismatch between how Goody would like to build this team and the strengths of Matt LaFleur as a head coach. Matt LaFleur needs established, really good, you know, already made players that he can go out and use. Like, think of it this way. He is the, you know, the chess master. He's the grandmaster at the chessboard. All right. You know, he's not the teacher that's teaching the next set of grandmaster. Like, you give him the right pieces and he's going to go out and he's going to paint a masterpiece, right? I'm using a lot of weird analogies here. You get my point though. He's the one that can put everything together and scheme it up the way that it needs to. But, you know, can he take, you know, these raw pieces that Goody's giving him, and can he get them matured enough to be the players that Goody wants them to become? I think there is still a disconnect a little bit between what Matt can do really well and how Goody goes about building the roster, even though I think Goody's been better and getting more established players during his tenure, certainly than what Ted Thompson was, especially late in Ted's career. We also have the first real signs of decay in the NFLPA report card this past year. The Matt LaFleur grade took a significant step back. They came in like 22nd, 23rd, somewhere in there after being top 10. There were questions about the training and strength and conditioning staff. There was, concerns about overall the organization. And the big one again was Matt LaFleur and taking a pretty big step back. Adam Stenovich graded very poorly, and just some signs of discontent between the players and the coaching staff and the organization. And that is not something, especially in Matt LaFleur's tenure, that we are used to. We have seen pretty consistently good grades over the last 3 years before this year on these report cards. And now all of a sudden, they're at the bottom third of the league? That should not happen for the Green Bay Packers. That should not be the way that things are going. Yet last year it was, and that was before they lost their final 5 games of the season. Imagine how some of those players felt if you would have pulled them after the season, after they lost 5 games in a row. Probably would have been even worse. I guarantee it would have been worse. So that is concerning as well. There are signs of cracking within the structure of what the Green Bay Packers are currently doing. You never, ever, ever want to see anything like that. I do think that you can question a little bit, at minimum, the return of Adam Stenovich and Luke Butkus. You might say, Andy, you are the one over and over that was saying Adam Stenovich, like you couldn't put together a reason why. That was until we got the NFLPA report card, where Adam Stenovich is graded poorly by the players. If there is any coach that should be in a really good spot to get graded well by the players, it's Adam Stenovich. He is in a pretty cushy spot where the coach is the one that's calling the plays and designing the offense. And he can kind of, you know, as Justice, I think, put it, like, be a vibes guy, like just get good vibes and get guys going and, you know, ready for game day and, you know, throw some cool stuff at them and, you know, give them, you know, what they need for, you know, to be ready for games. And like, that's a cushy, good spot to be in. So the fact that the players are like, no, we don't see it with him, and we're going to give it, what was it, like a C grade for Adam Stenovich? That's concerning. And for Luke Butkus, again, as I've talked about, it's difficult to know on the outside whether a coach, especially a position coach, is good or not. When everyone on the offensive line was either, you know, I would say there's very few that were even at expectations, and pretty much everyone was below expectations a year ago and took a step backwards. And guys like Elgton Jenkins and Rashid Walker performed nowhere near at their level. Guys like Anthony Belton didn't look like a second round pick when he played. Jordan Morgan has failed under his tutelage to take that significant step as a first round pick, but you're just going to bring him back? Of course that's concerning. And that's where, now we don't know for sure. We have not seen the finalized coaching staff. There could have been an under the radar offensive line change for the offensive line coach. But as of right now, doesn't seem that way. Seems like Butkus is going to be back, and that is one of the hardest non-coaching changes. That's tough. It's just tough to figure out. That was the one that I thought for sure, if they're going to go in any direction, a different direction with anybody, I thought it was going to be Butkus, but it does not seem that it went that way. And that leaves you a little bit scratching your head. You lost Jeff Hafley, a coach that the players seemingly had a tremendous amount of respect for and was a leader in the locker room, was great at the podium, knew all the right things to say, knew all the right buttons to push, wasn't as good of a defensive season in 2025 as it was in 2024, but it didn't seem like there was a lack of faith or effort, or you know, everyone seemed to give it their all on defense. And there were a lot of injuries, including to Micah Parsons, which is when that defense really started to deteriorate. And I don't think anybody in the organization wanted to lose Jeff Hafley. And now again, he's the head coach in Miami. After being a very sought-after coach this offseason with multiple interviews, probably could have taken multiple jobs, he decides to go to Miami, you know, work with John Eric Sullivan, who they also lost, by the way. And now Green Bay had to go in a different direction with a defensive coordinator, with Jonathan Gannon. I think he's going to be good, is solid, but it's a change, and you're not exactly sure how that's going to go. We'll be right back. Meanwhile, at special teams coordinator, everyone, and I mean everyone, felt like it was time to go in a different direction with Rich Bisaccia. For the most, I shouldn't say everyone, but for the most part, it felt like, at least if nothing else, it was indifference. And for the most part, people wanted a change. But Green Bay did not want to make a change. They were ready to double and triple down on Rich Bisaccia. As we talked to Brian Gutekunst at his press conference, he did legitimately double down on Rich Bisaccia on his press conference and what he brings to the team. Well, one of two things. Either A, they were extremely wrong and they completely biffed that decision to the point where then they screwed it up where Rich decides to leave anyway, and they're left in the lurch with, you know, getting a special teams coordinator at the end after all the other special teams coordinators had been hired. Or they were right and Rich Bisaccia was really good at his job and still couldn't put together a good special teams. And now they probably brought in somebody that is not as good as Rich Bisaccia. Either way, it doesn't look great. Now, hopefully they just hired the right guy. There's certainly, you know, reasons for hope there. But if they were that adamant that Rich Bisaccia was that good at his job, again, one of two things. They were either just completely dead wrong, which is not a great sign, or they are now worse at special teams coordinator. And you had to wait until every other special teams coordinator was hired because what I would consider a mismanagement of the situation. At some point, you have to give Rich Bisaccia a deadline to say, here's the date we need to know by. We need to know by this date if you're coming back or not. Because if you're not, we need to go in a different direction and be able to hire from all these great special teams coordinator candidates that are out there and available. We cannot wait past this time because we're going to miss on all those guys. And they clearly just thought he was coming back. And it would have been totally understandable if Rich Bisaccia just decided to retire or said, hey, I need a couple of years off or whatever the case. He found a job at Clemson already. He found a job at Clemson already as their special teams coordinator. And so I'm still stunned by the fact that they couldn't have come to that conclusion sooner. And maybe it's just all on Rich. Maybe Rich was saying, yeah, I plan on coming back, and then screwed him over. But at some point, if they didn't know for sure, you have to give a deadline to Bisaccia. They didn't. And it ended up hurting them to the point that all the other special teams coordinator positions were filled and you were left scraping the bottom of the barrel for whatever was left. Again, maybe they still made the right choice. Maybe they got it better. But you don't want to be in that position of just having to choose between whatever's left after every other team has filled their special teams coordinator opening. In fact, every other team filled their coordinator openings. All the offensive coordinator positions were filled, defensive coordinator positions were filled, and all the other special teams coordinator positions were filled. Acord was the very last one to be hired. Meanwhile, in 2025 and in 2024, Matt LaFleur and this Green Bay Packers team, yes, we know the, you know, 10-7, you know, sort of seventh seed that they have been, or what, you know, they've been the seventh seed over and over and over, seventh seed merchants, if you will. They've also been bad team merchants. In 2025, they went 2-5 against playoff teams. And in 2024, they went 2-6 against playoff teams. They are 4-11 in their last 15 games against good teams, against teams that made the playoffs. 4-11 in their last 15 games. In fact, the last loss before that was also to San Francisco in the NFC Championship game. So they are 4-12 in their last 16 games against playoff teams. That is a brutal record. And the 4-11 was a 26.7% winning percentage. 4-12 is 25%. You win one out of every four games against a good team, against a team that ultimately makes the playoffs over the last 2 years plus under Matt LaFleur. You are a bad team merchant. You can beat the bad teams, but you cannot beat consistently the good teams. That's not a great sign. The best teams can beat the best. Green Bay has not consistently shown that they can beat the best teams that are out there. And now, in 2024, at least when they went out and played bad teams, they won pretty much every single week. And many times they looked, you know, good doing it. This past year, it wasn't even that. You know, they lost to some bad teams. They lost to Cleveland. You couldn't go to Cleveland and beat Cleveland easily. And even in the games where, you know, against like Cincinnati was one, you know, Baltimore was not itself at the end of the year, and they get a huge win in Green Bay. Even in, against bad teams, Green Bay did not look convincing and even lost some of those games. That is concerning and should be reason for some doubt going into this year. You have four major players coming back from significant injury: Devontae Wyatt, Micah Parsons, Zach Tom, and Tucker Kraft. Now, Kraft, Tom, and Wyatt are all set to be back by the start of the season, and Parsons should be back by week 3, 4, 5, 6, somewhere in there. If even one of those players does not come back, or not come back, period, but like gets a, you know, a re-aggravating of the injury or a setback and misses an additional 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks, that is a massive issue. If just one of them has a setback, and or if, you know, 3 to 4 of them or 2 of them are like 85% of their former self, they don't quite recover the way that you would like and are not quite the player that they were prior to the injury, that's a problem. And it could be any of them. All four of these are massively important players. Maybe Devontae White a little bit less than the other ones, but all four of them are massively important to this team. So you need to go 4 for 4 on return to health with not only how they play, but not having any setbacks either. That might be a tough thing to do. And Green Bay needs to find a way to navigate that. Meanwhile, from a roster standpoint, Malik Willis is gone. Jordan Love has missed time over the last couple seasons, and Malik Willis has been a superhero. They don't have their superhero backup quarterback anymore. And you can make, you know, 2025, they, you know, they probably still make 2024. They don't make the playoffs without Malik Willis playing the way that he did. That is a lost play. Now, it didn't matter. They lost in the first round anyway, I guess, but you don't make the playoffs in 24 without Malik Willis. And Malik Willis once again performed extremely well when given the opportunity in 2025. And now that is gone from this team, and you have replaced him with, at the time being, Desmond Ridder. That's a major downgrade. Meanwhile, Josh Jacobs is a year older. You have not been able to trust Marshawn Lloyd, and Emmanuel Wilson is gone. And Chris Brooks is a nice third down back, but you don't have that faithful number two running back that you can count on right now because you can't trust Marshawn Lloyd at all. You have no idea if he's going to play a single snap this year, which seems a bit concerning. At wide receiver, Romeo Dobbs is gone, and in is Sky Moore. And yes, Jaden Reed, Christian Watson, some of those guys, they're coming back from it and hopefully are going to be healthy, although there's no guarantee of that. You're still overall depth from a pure roster standpoint has gone from Romeo Dobbs to Sky Moore. That's just worse. Golden can get better. Williams can get better. That's great. Wicks, you know, hopefully has a little bit of a bounce back. And Watson and Reed can be healthier this year. Those are all things that can trend in the positive. But at the end of the day, from a pure roster standpoint, Romeo Doubs, receiver that just went for $17 million per year on the open market, was replaced by Sky Moore. That is a downgrade, no matter what way you look at it. At tight end, you still have no blocking tight end, no realistic viable blocking tight end. And Tucker Kraft, again, is coming off of a torn ACL, a significant injury. We've seen Robert Tonyan in the past not quite come back the way that he was prior to that injury. On the offensive line, you have lost Elgton Jenkins and Rashid Walker. They both played poor a season ago. Totally fair observation. That's a real legitimate thing. But you lost two players that were starters for you, and you have gained nothing. You've gained nothing at this point in time. Sean Ryan's back. Darian Kennard is back. But you have gained nothing. You have lost depth on that offensive line, if nothing else. Even if they weren't great a year ago, you have lost depth and you have gained nothing. And offensive line was your real Achilles heel on offense last year. And so your decision so far has been to double down on what you have and get rid of two players in Rashid Walker and Elgton Jenkins while gaining nothing in return. Just hoping upon hope that guys like Jordan Morgan, Anthony Belton, Aaron Banks, Sean Ryan are going to be better this year than they were a season ago. Okay. With an offensive line coach that had an offensive line that completely underachieved in 2025. Okay. All right. Hope you're right. They don't have a nose tackle. All right. They technically have a nose tackle in Jonathan Ford and in Nasir Stackhouse, but they don't have a nose tackle. That seems to be a problem if you're going to move to a 3-4. Even if they don't move to a 3-4 and stay with a 4-3, they still feel like they need a run-stopping defensive tackle that just doesn't exist on the roster right now. And that feels like a problem. And DJ Reader and Daquan Jones are really the only two that are out there. And you don't want to trust a rookie. And Green Bay's been terrible at drafting defensive tackles in the second, third, and fourth round anyway. That seems like it could be a problem. The idea of Devontae Wyatt and LVN, the idea of both of those players is awesome. In theory, it should be great. In reality, neither of those players have been the level of player that you've needed them to be. And with Micah missing a portion of the season at the beginning of the year and just needing somebody to take the pressure off of Micah Parsons, those two are going to have to step up in a significant way. And we have yet to see that consistently from either of them at any point of their careers. Javon Hargrave and Zaire Franklin are supposed to be your solutions on defense. But neither of them are getting any younger. They're both in their 30s. Franklin's coming off the worst season of his career. And Javon Hargrave was a pretty easy cut candidate for Minnesota. Maybe he didn't fit there in the scheme, but he's what now going to be 32, 33 years old? He's not getting any younger. Neither is Franklin. You're adding two olds to that defense. Will they be able to be the solution? Maybe. A little bit skeptical. As mentioned, Micah Parsons is coming off injury, probably going to miss a few games. What if he misses the first four or five games of the season and then is on a snap count after that? How are LVN, Baron Sorrell, Brenton Cox, and Colin Oliver going to be as your starting defensive ends or your rotation of defensive ends that need to get to the quarterback when you couldn't get there with that group, plus Rashawn Gary and Kingsley Enagbare? Two players that are getting paid much more and actually had interest in the open market this offseason. Rashawn Gary getting a fourth-round pick, plus getting a contract, and Enagbare getting almost $10 million on a one-year deal. Those two are gone, and now you have to count on LVN, Baron Sorrell, Brenton Cox, and Colin Oliver when Micah's out, and your defense in your secondary was brutal when Micah was out. What if you start 0-4, 1-3? You just can't have it happen. Those guys better be ready to step up. As mentioned, an inside linebacker, Franklin is coming off a brutal season in Indianapolis, and he's not getting any younger. You have no answers at corner. I get Benjamin St. Juste. I really like Benjamin St. Juste as a pickup, all right? You have no legitimate starting corner answers right now. Keyshawn Nixon was just flat out bad at the end of last year. I can defend to an extent how he played for good chunks of 2024, beginning to middle of the year in 2025. It's not as bad as people think it was, but the end of 2025 was as bad, if not worse, than people thought it was. And that's certainly a huge area of concern. Carrington Valentine, they tried to bench him a couple times. He couldn't tackle at the end of the year. Seems like he lost confidence. And right now, if you're starting a game today, Keyshawn Nixon and Carrington Valentine probably still playing a bunch of snaps at corner for you. There's still a draft left, no question about it. Spoiler alert, we talked about it the other day. Green Bay has not been great at drafting corners in the second, third, or fourth rounds either. That could be a problem. Or we better hope that Benjamin St. Juste is legit and can be basically a number one corner for Green Bay, which is probably what they need him to be if they want a serious answer. And that's a lot to put on Benjamin St. Juste, who signed a pretty minimal deal for Green Bay this offseason. You're just hoping on a hope and a prayer that that corner group can be better this year. Fingers crossed. We'll be right back. You have the return of Brandon McManus, who missed a lot of important kicks and was not what you needed him to be a season ago. You just gave him a $1 million roster bonus last week. Great. Grand. Wonderful. Meanwhile, you also lost Zane Anderson and Aaron Mosby on special teams. Yes, you brought back Neiman and Welch. I'll be shocked if both of those guys make the 53. So really, you probably just got one of them. And meanwhile, Zane Anderson and Aaron Mosby, two key players on teams, are also gone. You have the toughest division, at least on paper, from top to bottom in all of football. You can make an argument about the NFC West, but at least you get two easy wins against the Cardinals, usually, in that division. There's no easy wins in the NFC North. Arguably the toughest division from top to bottom. The Seahawks and Rams are still clear favorites in the NFC. Green Bay, at best, is still behind those two. At best, they're going to have to overcome two very, very talented teams. And now the Rams, who were probably better than Green Bay last year, now added two really great corners to that team. And as what, a top 15 draft pick? Thank you, Atlanta Falcons, for giving them that. That's going to be some significant upgrades for a team that really struggled in the corner room. They went and they saw their number one issue was corner, and they went and got Trent McDuffie and Jalen Watson. And Green Bay did not identify that their biggest need was corner when they probably should have, and they got Benjamin St. Juste. Those two things do not equate the exact same way. Injuries are probably bound to happen again. This has been a very injured team, and since they went with this, you know, new strength and conditioning staff, they seem to be happening at a higher level. I don't know if you can equate it to that or not. I like to think you can't, but it's been a little bit damning as of late. Your upgrades on the team are Javon Hargrave, Sky Moore, Benjamin St. Juste, and Zaire Franklin. In a year where, you know, hey, it's time to start winning championships again, and you just made an all-in move for Micah Parsons, and you lost your last five games in a row and lost Romeo Doubs and Malik Willis, and we can go on and on, Rashid Walker, Quay Walker, Kingsley Enagbare, Rashawn Gary, Elton Jenkins. You had a bunch of losses. Emmanuel Wilson, Zane Anderson, Javon Hargrave, Sky Moore, Benjamin St. Juste, and Zaire Franklin are going to be your only players that you bring in as your core replacements and your core upgrades. All right. See if it works out. And you can just ultimately make a strong argument that they didn't do quite enough. That despite having a team that is very talented, ready to take a step, should be ready to win and be in a championship mode, that they are just falling a little bit short of where some of these other teams are, and especially making some of these aggressive moves this offseason, like the Rams did. Like the Rams did by bringing in two extremely talented corners at their weakest position. And last but not least, why would all of a sudden this year be different? You can make an argument that at the end of 2023, they got on a little bit of a hot streak against a couple bad teams at the end of the regular season. They went into Dallas against what was ultimately going to become a very bad football team very fast. Dallas did not play well in 2024. It was more of just a precursor of what was to come for Dallas. They just hit it before anyone knew it. And then they went into San Fran and lost in 2024. They lost against pretty much all of their tough opponents, including that opening game against Philly and the closing game against Philly. And then in 2025, ups and downs, five-game losing streak at the end. They have not been a consistent performing team, especially against the best of the best. Why do you believe now, with some serious losses and with Javon Hargrave and Benjamin St. Juste and Sky Moore as your major replacements, with no first-round pick this year, no first-round pick next year to trade away if you wanted to go and get somebody, why do you feel like this is going to be the year that's different? It's just Jonathan Gannon and, you know, new special teams coordinator and Cam Acord. Is that what's going to be the difference? It's just going to be, you know, Javon Hargrave. Maybe you just stay healthy. All right. Maybe. But it just feels like they didn't quite do enough. that in a season where they're trying to win a championship, they didn't make championship team style moves. Those are the reasons to be overly pessimistic. As I mentioned, these are cranked up. Some of these things, I believe. All of them, I think there's a level of truth in, period. I'm not, again, just making things up for the sake of making things up. I believe there's a level of truth in everything we discussed today. I think if you go back and listen to the counterpoints and the positivity from yesterday, you'll feel like some of these are probably undercut by some of the things that you can say positively about the team as well. If you want to be positive about this team, you can go back and listen to yesterday's episode, and I think there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic. If you want to be pessimistic about this team, I hate Matt LaFleur and hate Brian Gutekunst, and they're just undercutting this team, and you're never going to win anything with Gutekunst and Matt LaFleur, there's evidence. We went through a lot of it today. This is actually not meant to be the point of my video or the point of this series. The truth is always that there is something in between. There's a gray area, and there's a beauty in that gray area. There are reasons to be very concerned about where this team is at and if they can actually get over the hump and take it to that next level. And I think we hit a lot of those things today. I think a lot of the things we talked about today are real legitimate concerns. And I think there are a lot of reasons to be optimistic that this team is very, very close. And if just a couple things go their way with injuries and a couple players take a step, that you could easily see this team making a run towards the Super Bowl. Just be wary of anyone that hits those two sides of the extreme all the time. It's just always sunshine and rainbows, or it's always doom and gloom. There's always going to be people that follow that doom and gloom that are going to be posting all the negativity, and it's easy to fall into that trap. If you're not seeing the reasons for optimism, you're blinded. You're purely blinded just by, I don't know if it's hatred for, you know, Matt LaFleur, or hatred for Brian Gutekunst, or hatred, you know, because you didn't like the Jordan Love trade and draft pick, and so now you're just holding it against the franchise because they're never going to win anything with Jordan Love. Whatever it is, it's easy to fall in love with those things, with the hatred. Let the hate flow within you. But if you're not looking at any of the positives, you're simply blinded. And the same goes for the other side. If you are just sunshine and rainbows and everything's positive and all those negative things will take care of themselves, you're also blinded. There are real reasons to be legitimately positive about this team. And there are real reasons to have real concern. And that's the beauty of it. And now we get to see that beautiful balance and what plays out. And if this team overcomes their deficiencies, or if they succumb to them, or if they can actually play to the level that we all hope that they can play to. It's going to be a fun season. There's a lot of offseason left. There's a lot of improvement that needs to be made. There's roster changes that need to be done. We have a whole draft ahead of us. Plenty of time for hope to spring eternal. But there are reasons for positivity. There's reasons for pessimism. And that's what I wanted to cover. Let me know where you land. Again, I think the beauty is somewhere in the middle. I think it's a gray area. And I can't wait to see how the season plays out. I know you can't either. And of course, we'll have you covered right here on the Pack-A-Day podcast, 365 days a year, whether they're 0-17 or 17-0 or anything in between. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, PJ Wynn, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, David McCluskey, Alex Wong, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gasford, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Willie Winkle, Sinkle, The Gable Storm, Pack Attack Cast, Chris Weish, Craig, John D. Metropolis, Hader Radomski, Devin Lane, Alexander Newell, Richard Morales, Les Nino, Beast Bumblebee, Benjamin Sargent, Steve Bates, John Mark Liddell, Nemo, Donald Decker, Damon Hartley, Zilch Zillertson, Large Charles, Jake Conner, Will Glass, and Imperium Collectibles. See you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.